Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Tuesday, May 4th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast, Inflating to Social Crises. Now, I think with all of the central bank money printing, the federal government fiscal policy measures that have been implemented globally, they are attempting to prevent crises. With all of these actions, I think it's going to create the exact opposite of that. This is just delaying the inevitable. There is no easy path out of this. We have a severe deficit when it comes to leadership on the global stage. Anybody that wants to take accountability or responsibility for decades worth of poor policy on the monetary level and at the fiscal level. So we are attempting again to just wash this all away, to fill the void that occurred during 2020. And do not forget that we were witnessing economic weakness throughout 2019. It was already starting to roll over. And then lo and behold, we have this global pandemic, COVID-19, and then the subsequent lockdowns and restrictions, which just decimated the global economic landscape. And we're going to be dealing with these negative consequences for quite a long time, no matter what they tell us. No matter what Jay Powell, the Federal Reserve, might say that the United States economy is recovering, bunch of hogwash. No matter what the Biden administration might say about all of their fiscal measures that they have already implemented is saving the U.S. economy, is bringing us back, all a bunch of nonsense. The money that they have spent did not come into existence through production. That's the way in which money is supposed to come into existence. You have added something to the economic pie. You've expanded the economic pie. People aren't working. People are being incentivized not to go to work because Uncle Sam is sending them money, just as much money as they were when they were working, maybe more, maybe even less, but they make the bet. They make the decision off of the trade-off. Well, I don't have to deal with this idiot or that idiot. Don't got to go into traffic. Don't have to deal with this. And you know what? I'd rather just stay home, play video games, listen to music, take naps all day, whatever the case might be. So they say, well, I don't have to worry about it because Uncle Sam's going to keep sending these checks until September. So we'll see what happens then. And people have already been conditioned now over the course of 2020 to expect, to anticipate perhaps, another extension of those benefits. So it may extend into 2022. It may extend to at least to the end of this year. Because what are we going to end up, running into at the end of September? Well, now we're going to be starting flu season, aren't we? And now we're going to have to contend with the traditional flu and COVID-19. So what excuse might they come up with next for further restrictions, lockdowns, or what have you? And then the Democrats and the Biden administration are going to say, oh, everybody's suffering once again. We got these lockdowns placed, put back into place. Can't do that. Can't allow people to go back out into the economy because it's just too dangerous. The flu season, COVID resurgence, whatever the excuse might be. Maybe something worse. So we'll continue to send you checks. That's a possibility because we've already witnessed that. They've done that before. We thought that might not have been a possibility before, but hey, it happened and it continues to happen. There's already further discussion that I come across a couple articles this afternoon talking about the various moratoriums that are in place, those forbearances, student loans, rent, mortgage. Oh, they might extend those for a few months too, and those are coming to an end here shortly. Some of them I think have already expired or about to. So where's all this, what's all of this leading up to? I think it's going to lead up to social crisis. globally. Because the price pressure that continues to move one commodity after the next higher and higher, in my estimation, is going to continue. Now, nothing goes straight up. Will there be corrections? I believe that there will be. But the general trajectory over the coming years, and I stress this because I think this is going to be the case, that this is going to be an extremely difficult decade, and it may very well continue into the 2030s as well because of all of these policies, because of how much debt we have thrown into the system. We are attempting to solve a global debt crisis by adding even more debt into the system. It's completely ridiculous. But again, we have a huge deficit in leadership, accountability, and responsibility. So we're just simply not going to get that. And so they're picking what happens to be a logical decision, given some of their options. They don't want to be leaders. They don't want to take accountability. So scratch that. That's removed from the table, from the book of options that they have. That is not one that they are going to take. So another option that they have is, well, let's just try to inflate all of this away. But that's going to cause an even bigger problem, in my estimation. Revolutions are fought on empty stomachs. I want to talk here today about, again, rising food prices globally, these commodity price increases, whether that's construction materials, whether that's base metals, industrial metals, whether that's precious metals, whether that's agricultural products. One after the next continues to climb higher, and I believe this trend will continue for the foreseeable future. In conjunction with the supply chain disruptions that were in existence, again, prior to the pandemic because of the trade wars, but have gotten worse since then, and I don't think they're going to be alleviated anytime soon. A lot not in this country either, because people do not want to go back to work because they are being incentivized not to. So that's going to continue to put upward pressure. The Federal Reserve is not done printing money. Neither are other major central banks the world over. That, by definition, is inflation. That is going to continue to put upward pressure on these prices. And it's almost on a daily basis now, we are getting major corporations coming out announcing that they will be increasing the prices of their products, which is no surprise to us here at the Capital News, nor should it be to our audience, because we've been talking about this for quite a while. And this is not going to be transitory, in my estimation. And of course, that word transitory or temporary is what is being spun out there as the narrative from the Federal Reserve, from some members of the Biden administration, but primarily the Federal Reserve, that this is just something that we have to deal with because of the base effects. Numbers were so low in 2020 because of COVID-19. We're dealing with those base effects, so anything that's an increase is going to look bigger than what it actually is. Furthermore, we're perfectly fine with inflation running a little hot, because a little inflation, they say, is actually a good thing for the economy. And inflation was running so low for so long, below our target of 2%, which is complete arbitrary, that we're fine if it runs above 2% for a little while. Now, they don't know how long it's going to run above 2%. They don't know that it's going to be transitory. That's what they're hoping it is. They don't know. They said subprime was going to be contained. They were wrong about that. And they're wrong about pretty much everything that they bring up publicly. But when you read their actual reports and read some of the fine print, they throw some little tidbits of information in there every now and again that says, now this might be something that you have to pay attention to. But not too many people read these reports. Of course, I'll take the time to read them from time to time. And that's when you get sort of the real information as to what they might actually be thinking behind closed doors, but what they'll never really discuss in public, right? They got to continue to spin this narrative that everything is fantastic, everything's getting better, and inflation is a good thing. I don't think many of you would agree with that statement, but we'll leave it at that. And our fearless genius Treasury Secretary, Janet Dingbat Yellen, put her foot in her mouth once again today, and the Treasury Department, the White House, had to do a little bit of damage control because she mentioned how we may have to increase interest rates. Now, it's interesting that this woman said this because she used to criticize anybody within the Trump administration who would suggest or give the appearance of attempting to dictate to the Federal Reserve what the Federal Reserve should do with respect to interest rates or any other type of monetary policy for that matter. So it wasn't okay for somebody within the Trump administration to voice their opinion or to attempt to give a directive to the Fed, but it's perfectly okay, apparently, for Janet Dingbat Yellen to do so. And stocks sold off on this, but, you know, that's part of the narrative. I'm not going to say that's the only reason stocks sold off today. I mean, they're frothy. They're at record valuations. They've been going on a tear here. Okay, so to have some type of pullback is not the end of the world. But nonetheless, her comments did not help. And we know her comments did not help because we know what higher interest rates will lead to. Because we know what happened back in the fourth quarter of 2018, which I like to stress from time to time on this podcast to the audience, because to me, that was a shot across the bow. The fourth quarter of 2018, I think, is going to be a turning point when economic historians look back on this time period and say, that was a shot across the bow. That was a turning point. Because we had been sort of tapering quantitative easing. It had been stabilizing, but now it was a roll-off of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, which at the time was about shy of $4 trillion, okay? And interest rates were still extremely low, but we were starting to increase them because we've been on this experiment of quantitative easing for a decade. Everybody was saying, including the President of the United States, that this was the greatest economy ever. Of course, it wasn't, but that was the narrative. And if things are so great, well, if you can't increase interest rates then, if you can't start to quote-unquote normalize the Fed's balance sheet then when things are apparently good, then when are you ever going to be able to do so? Well, they attempted to do it. They attempted to taper. They attempted to roll off the balance sheet. They attempted to increase interest rates, and they did. And the economy couldn't handle it. The stock market didn't like it. Entered a bear market, a drop of 20% over the fourth quarter alone. Threw a hissy fit, threw a tantrum, didn't like it. Now we've basically doubled the balance sheet, the Fed's balance sheet, since then. We're nearing $8 trillion, making all-time highs almost on a weekly basis. And we talk about that here every Thursday. So what do you think is going to happen if we increase interest rates now with a system that is even more fragile today than it was then? These are not difficult questions to ask. These are not difficult observations to make either. Yet nobody wants to ask these basic questions. This is attempting to inflate all of our problems away, and I think it's just going to make them that much worse. Because revolutions are fought on empty stomachs. You want a good barometer as to when revolutions have broken out historically? Look at the price of bread. Okay, these basic staples of living. And of course, that has been my argument here for a long time when it comes to the debate between those in the inflation camp and those in the deflation camp or disinflation camp. Disinflation being inflation at a lesser rate, at a decreasing pace. I come down on the inflation argument because I am most concerned with the things that people need to live. Need to live. I am not concerned with all of the tech gadgets that you can do away with, that you really don't need. Yeah, it's nice to have them, the luxuries, whatever, their conveniences. But the end of the day, that's not what counts to me. Because that's what I think this decade is going to be about. It's what is actually needed to survive. And that's the basics. Those are those consumer staples. Those are those commodities which are starting to make their way into higher prices. We have a stock market that is priced to perfection. Things cannot go wrong for Mr. Market, or he ain't going to like it. And when you have these price increases, there's only so much that a company, a corporation, no matter the size, they only have a few options as to what they can do. They can eat it, and so their margins are going to get squeezed. Well, if they're publicly traded companies, well, Mr. Market's not going to like that because they're priced to perfection. They are anticipating fantastic results. Well, if their margins are getting squeezed because they're eating these price hikes because they're afraid of losing market share, well, that ain't going to turn out too well, is it? They can pass those prices on to their consumers, but now their consumers aren't going to like it and they might lose market share. And the law of demand tells us price increases, quantity demanded decreases. So that's not going to bode too well either. Or it could be a combination thereof. They could eat some of it, have some of their margins squeezed, not entirely, and then pass on some of those higher prices. We'll get a combination of all of those. Eventually, it's going to make its way through the system. But it's day by day, more companies are coming out announcing price increases. And something also to be mindful of that I like to remind the audience about is do not just pay attention to the price, but pay attention to the quantity. So pay attention to the weight. You used to get 18 ounces. Is it now 16 ounces? Is it now 14 ounces? What is it? You used to get a count of 50. Are you now getting a count of 48, 46, 45, 40, whatever the case might be? You understand what I'm saying? Because it's probably going to be a combination of both. And a lot of people, we've already been witnessing this. You go to the grocery store, what have you. These are the types of crises that will occur. These will turn into uprisings. We already see a lot of them taking place. You see out of control inflation in several countries around the globe. These are the weakest links, but we are starting to see other countries affected by this as well. There will be a breaking point. It could be a simple tax increase. We've already seen these types of things where simple tax increases turn into protests, riots, attempts at revolutions. We saw that throughout 2019. Took a pause in 2020 because of the pandemic. A lot of it continues to this day. I think it will continue to pick up steam because the solutions, the quote-unquote solutions that politicians and policymakers are implementing are not solutions. They're band-aids on a gunshot wound, and that is not a solution. In fact, delaying the actual solution is only going to make it worse. And the solution is to allow market forces to cleanse the system of all of the malinvestment that exists. And that is going to be excruciatingly painful. There's no easy way out of this. You cannot do what we have done for as long as we have done it, come to a panic mode, which we're in now and have been, and say, oh, well, what are we going to do? Well, let's do more of what we did that got us here. That does not make any sense, but that's exactly what we did. It's exactly what we continue to do. And that's why I think we will see an increase of these types of social crises, these political fallouts, all stemming from economic policy because people just do not get it. Then today we got information here out of the States. The March trade deficit is at an all-time high, $74.4 billion for the month of March, $74.4 billion trade deficit. And much of the media spins this, or maybe it's just their ignorance, but they spin this as being fantastic news. Increasing deficits, fantastic news, according to many in the mainstream media, because that means the American consumer is back. Well, the American consumer isn't working. We still have nearly 17 million Americans collecting some form of unemployment insurance. Productivity is declining. But they think it's a good thing. Well, they're getting this money from Uncle Sam. And we've seen this in retail sales. When there's a stimulus check that goes out, Oh, lo and behold, consumption goes through the roof. Retail sales spike. When there's no stimulus check, they fall off. Okay, so how much longer are we going to continue to play this game? It's not how it works. And when you look at the twin deficit of the budget deficit, which this year alone is going to be about $4.5 trillion, fantastic, and our growing trade deficit, this does not look good for the U.S. dollar, meaning the dollar is going to be weaker, which means that will continue to put upward pressure on commodities because most commodities are priced in U.S. dollars. And again, that is the inflation. That is the effect of inflation. You're increasing the supply of something. You're destroying its value. All right. So that's why you're going to continue to see prices continue higher. And don't forget, you have a lot of countries around the world that have their debt priced in U.S. dollars. All right. So you got to contend with all of this. So that's sort of, now with a weaker dollar, that can sort of help them out perhaps. But there is poor policy being implemented globally. So you could perhaps continue to see that dollar weakness, or as I've stated here for months, really for over the past year, you could still perhaps see the final swan song of a U.S. dollar, meaning a big rise. And then you could have that dollar doom loop scenario, which I've talked about many times before. So there's a lot of unknowns here, because it's not just the United States that's in crisis. It's the rest of the world. And so it's sort of who's the, you know, the cleanest shirt in a laundry. All right. That's what we're going to have to pay attention to and monitor that as closely as we can. But market performance, we have the dollar index at 91.25. Everything's kind of tame on the foreign exchange market currently overnight. Bitcoin is trading at $54,600 a coin. A sell-off on Wall Street today. Overnight futures trading, however, in the green. Dow Jones Industrial Average up about 0.1%. The S&P 500 up about 0.2%. The NASDAQ 100 slightly in the green, but let's call it flat. A sea of red across the pond in Europe. The German DAX gave back 2.5% to trade below 15,000 points. And the cash trade in Australia is putting on a gain of about 0.4%. On the commodity front, WTI $66.24 a barrel. Brent $69.44, so getting close to that 70 handle once again. Natural gas $2.97, getting close to that $3 handle. Gasoline $2.16, and again, expect a spike in gasoline prices over the summer months. Gold and silver took a hit today. They did well again yesterday, like we said, gave some of that back. Gold is at $1,778 per ounce. Silver at $26.38 an ounce. Copper up 0.8% to trade at $4.57 a pound. And lumber, $1,609. Per 1,000 linear board feet. And that was our main talking point on yesterday's podcast, Priced Out of Housing, where what we witnessed in February was a report that indicated that the average cost for a new home build increased by $24,000 just because of the price of lumber. That was back in February, where we got another report that came out that we read yesterday. And now instead of it being an increase of $24,000, it's an increase of $36,000 only a few months later. And the report also noted that when it comes to rents, that's going to increase the monthly rent payment by about $120. And I saw further analysis of this for somebody who did the math when it comes to the average mortgage payment on a traditional 30-year mortgage. Well, that's going to increase that monthly payment by about $150. Okay, so fantastic. So all of that funny money that Uncle Sam gave us, everybody thinking it's fantastic, not understanding debt, not understanding inflation, not understanding any of this mechanics. What was taking place and what continues to take place is Uncle Sam stole the money out of your right pocket, put it into your left pocket, and you think you're making out. No, you're not. You're being robbed. You are being royally screwed over. You just don't realize it. You think this is a gift. It's not. This is going to be the most expensive gift you've ever received. But guess what? You're paying for it. But you think it's a gift. Free was never so expensive. Check out that podcast. That was a year ago. You have to find that on our YouTube channel. We've seen this coming, folks. Seen it coming from a mile away, which is why I was dead set against this before they even started these shenanigans. And I knew that they were going to start these shenanigans because that's what these people do. Because these are the same people who have been there for the past 10, 20, 30 years. They are not going to change their stripes, their spots, whatever analogy you want to use. These are the people that led us to economic ruin. They're going to continue to do so. Okay, so pay attention to that because people are being priced out of housing. That will lead to social crises because you're going to have a generation, primarily the millennial generation, who is priced out, cannot get their lives started. Family formation basically out the window. And we have a huge financial problem in this country, if you're not aware of it. You know, the unfunded liabilities are about $100 trillion. I think it's even more than that. I'll have to check the U.S. debt clock, but it's $100 trillion. And most of that is in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. So to keep this Ponzi scheme a-moving, you need more people. That's how Ponzi schemes stay alive. You need more suckers to come into the world so that they can go to work and be taxed to pay for people who are in the system. That's how that works. But because you have so much debt, because you can't afford to start your life, it's delaying this natural progression, or at least what has been deemed natural progression, because as to what we've been accustomed to for so many years, that's sort of going by the wayside now. Then Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 1.59%, 1.59%. Okay, so commodity prices, a lot of them are getting close to where we were during 2010, 2011, 2012. And if you recall, that is when the Arab Spring started to take place, where you just had these massive protests and riots and attempts at revolutions across the Middle East. Okay? And one of the slogans of that era was the people want to bring down the regime. The people want to bring down the regime. Doesn't that sound familiar? And some of the leading causes of the Arab Spring, unemployment, human rights violations, inflation, poverty, all of these types of things, the same things that we are witnessing today. What's taking place in Syria, what's taking place in Lebanon, in Turkey, in Yemen, in Oman, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, these whole areas, and beyond the Middle East. Continue to worsen. And we have commodity prices, food prices, today where they were back then. If they caused a problem then, what do you think is going to happen today? And we're not done yet. We're not done yet with these price hikes. So you see where I'm going with this. You see why I have been beating the drum for the past couple of years on this. Because it's not getting any better, unfortunately. And when you take a deeper look into these numbers, if you look at the UN's World Food Program, they estimate that 960 million people do not have enough food to be healthy. Staggering number. 960 million people do not have enough food to be healthy. Almost a billion people. Three times the population of the United States. That's huge. That is not trivial. That is a big number. And then some 64 million of them are scattered across 12 Arab states. So something to be mindful of. We know that this region has protested before. What's going to stop them from doing it this time? Also from the World Food Program, 34 million people around the world are on the brink of famine. 34 million, about 10% of the population of this country. And then according to the WFP, they need $5.5 billion to avert this famine. $5.5 billion, that's chump change. Jay Powell and company at the Federal Reserve are pumping $120 billion per month into the system by purchasing Uncle Sam's junk bonds and buying $40 billion. That's included in the $120 billion, but $40 billion per month of mortgage-backed securities, even though housing prices are at all-time highs. And according to the World Food Program, they just need $5.5 billion to fend off a famine that will affect 34 million people. You see, folks, I'm not advocating that we print the money and give it to everybody, okay? But if we're going to print the money to buy Uncle Sam's junk bonds, if we're going to print the money so that the Federal Reserve can purchase the corporate debt of Apple and Verizon and AT&T and Volkswagen and Toyota, so not even American corporations, some of them, and some of the largest corporations on the planet that did not need assistance, and the Federal Reserve did not have the authority to do so, but they did so anyway. If they can give them the money, then why can't they give the money to people who are starving to death? Okay, again, I'm not advocating this, but if you can do it for that reason, why can't you do it for one that's supposed to, that would really be good? Okay, that's just, you know, my question. But this is what we're going to have to contend with. We're going to have to contend with this unraveling. With, oh, well, you know what, we're throwing money into the system so Wall Street banks can once again take outsized risks. But hey, they're making record profits, man, especially on their trading desks. I guess that's what $120 billion in liquidity per month will do for you. But we got people starving around the planet. Yeah, they just need $5.5 billion. I can't give it to them. I can't figure out how to do it. I don't know how to do it. Maybe Morgan Stanley or J.P. Morgan or some other bank can figure out how to do it, but the central banks just they don't know how to do it. And apparently the other banks don't want to help these people out either. So that's fantastic, isn't it? So these are some big numbers to pay attention to. I suggest you check out the UN's World Food Program. Check out some articles that they have there. Another interesting website that I came across is called theworldcounts.com. Theworldcounts.com. They have a number of statistics on there, which I think are pretty interesting, something to see, sort of showing you the trends of various things. One such thing that they have on one of their homepages here is people who died from hunger. And so far this year, that number is at 3 million. And yearly, that number comes in at about 9 million per year. People dying from starvation or some sort of malnutrition, reason due to malnutrition. Now, that number is getting a little bit better, which is a good thing, but it is still far too high, far too high. And that 9 million annual figure is actually higher than the death toll of AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis combined. So just for a little perspective as to how big that number is. So just some things to keep in the back of your mind, the front of your mind, however important these things might be to you. But we are far from out of the woods. It's those weakest links that we have seen collapse, that are on the verge of collapse. We have larger economies that are weakening, buckling at the knees, dealing with inflation, dealing with economic crises, dealing with political crises, dealing with social crises. Once it makes its way into the developed world, which it most definitely will, because we talked about this last week with that open letter from various generals and members of the French military saying, hey, this country's going to civil war. Developed nations aren't used to this type of stuff. They're not used to seeing people starve to death. They're not used to having to walk, not to your refrigerator to get water, but having to walk to another village to get water. People aren't used to that in developed countries. If something like that should happen, where you have these types of crises, you have these types of breakdowns in supply chains, in just the normal business structure, the normal flow of commerce, people will go ballistic in Europe, in the United States, in Canada, in Australia. They'll go ballistic because they've never been in that type of situation. So these are things to be mindful of, because I'm telling you, you may have thought I was crazy in 2019 saying what was going to happen, and it happened. You may have thought I was crazy before they started implementing the Nobody Cares Act 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, and everything else they're coming. I said it was coming. Here it is. This is the next thing. And I hope I'm wrong. I hoped I was wrong with all that stuff. But it came true. I hope I'm wrong about this. But I just don't know how they're going to stop it. Because the train left the station as far as I'm concerned. And while they're attempting to inflate these problems away, what they're actually going to do is just inflate us right into a crisis. So stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.